I think I'll share just, I want to share a bit of a broad brush sharing that relates to, I think, a lot of the questions and the sharing is that we realize that we need each other in the path of practice. We call it Sangha. You may call it another name. But practicing together, we find so supportive. We can be there for each other's difficult moments, our pain, with our collective energy of coming back to ourselves and breathing. We can offer that stability, that feeling of like being a boat, where even we have heavy stones in the boat, sometimes the boat can still float. That's what Sangha can do. So there is room for the joy, for the happiness, and there is also space and support for difficult feelings too. All the weather can be in the room, thanks to the practice, the collective practice of community and each other, spiritual friends. So when we come together like this, we actually create the environment that we want. And it is a balm to maybe the crazy environment out there that we can get intoxicated with. And it is also a reminder of something that maybe has been not watered enough, a bit dormant in us, that this connection to, way of connecting to ourselves and to our meeting our real needs is so much more what we want than our old patterns of behavior, which were also strategies in some way to meet a need in us. They were a way that we didn't know another way to take care of difficult feelings, and sometimes we allowed ourselves, or we were led astray in different ways. Also, society, the consumer society does that. It wants us to consume because of the way the economy is structured. So it will try to water those seeds. So we are kind of a pocket of resistance, because the consumption is actually, the reason it's so easy for it to be watered in is because it is a very basic way to avoid suffering. And the practice is not to avoid suffering, but to take care of suffering. And sometimes we can do that with our own personal practice, and sometimes our personal practice needs the support of other people's practice to be able to be there with what's coming up. So we ask the Sangha for support, we take refuge in the Sangha. Like we wouldn't try to swim across the channel, we take a boat, a ferry. There may be some strong swimmers that could do it, but somehow it's more pleasant to go together on a boat. Once in a while you want to challenge yourself, pitch yourself against the city. And it can be fun. I mean, I have lived in London. It can be fun to walk through a market in Camden. Somebody said they came from Camden. And just not be taken with the things, but just be walking mindfully. It can be fun to practice on the tube. If you've know how to do it. But we, and I remember taking buses to the Sangha when it was at St. James, and I would make an intention to pay attention to the trees, blessed in London with many trees, instead of the adverts. So I'd always try to find the bits of nature that are around and put my attention there. It's like right attention. And it can be fun if we're in that place where we're able to, but sometimes when we get overwhelmed, it feels like sometimes we come to Sangha and we've just been washed up on the shore. And then we come away feeling refreshed, but we feel like, gosh, is that what I have to do every week? Just like, so it's nice to, so maybe we need to go to Sangha twice a week to support ourselves. We do what it takes. I mean, to live in a monastery of environment can be wonderful, but I know for myself, it's not always, you have your challenges there too. And you have a lot of relationships to take care of, you know, with brothers, you can get fall prey to patterns of thinking and negative thinking. So you still have to practice right diligence. It's not just putting yourself in the environment and putting and if we practice together in the city, we do it for not just ourselves, but for other people to find out, yes, it is possible. And we as monastics want to support people being able to practice in these different environments, including in places like Gaza. I also have some personal contacts in Palestine, but also in Liberia at the moment. And what I've discovered is they are just so incredibly grateful for knowing that we are here practicing, and that we are holding them in our hearts, and that we connect with them. We don't have to feel awkward about, I can't understand possibly what's going on for them. We just have to be there for them, be in contact, and as much as we can. And if we the more we practice, the more opportunities and clarity there will be about what we might be able to do in our context. But to be in touch is huge with people. They need contact. They feel so isolated in these situations. And that goes for the both sides, in the Israelis also. Israeli Jewish, Israeli Muslim, Christian. In a sense, they're all in the same boat. They're in a boat together. Some have the role of being oppressing. Some feel more victim. And both have different narratives. And they both feel that they're a victim. What can we do? We can practice and stay in touch, and opportunities will present themselves. So I think I've, as I say, because of time, I did a bit of a broad brush, but I know I've left some big holes for my brother to fill.
Dear friends, feel a lot of the things were covered already. Thank you. It's beautiful. While on the subject of Palestine, I can just say very briefly that we have a group of practitioners right now that are organizing a retreat in Plum Village for young Palestinians and Israelis to come and practice together. And they'll be coming with sponsoring, well, actually maybe you're sponsoring them. A lot of people have donated to support them to come to Plum Village to help cover their travel costs. I think it's about 40 people. I'm not sure exactly in the end, but in a good sized group, and they're coming, I think, in October. So it's just a handful out of a whole population. But I think we all know what those small transformations in people's hearts can then do, spreading out into their families, their circles of friends and acquaintances. And, so we do what we can, and it's maybe a lot. I wanted to share very briefly about quieting the monkey mind. So you asked, with the practice of meditation, are we able to quiet the monkey mind? I would say yes, sometimes. but increasingly. I can say for myself that the practice works. It really works. And thank goodness. I feel like, for many years I took Thay's teaching of the 16 exercises of mindful breathing. And in fact, I focused most of my attention just on the first four. So very much like what we did in the guided sitting meditation, aware of the breath, following the whole length of the breath, aware of the body, relaxing, releasing tensions in the body. That's enough, right, for a lifetime. It's an amazing practice, and I have absolute confidence in that practice to be able to help calm my body, and then the emotions as well, the thinking. It works. It works. In terms of when to be present with an emotion or when to change the track, I think there's a question of measuring our strength. So sometimes when you wake up in the morning, you want to see how much energy you have in your body. You can try to just make a fist or see kind of how much strength do I have. And sometimes you feel weaker, sometimes you feel stronger. And it's a little bit like that with the practice, that sometimes something comes up and you just know that it's too much, can't handle it. And you have to know that. It's good to know that. And that, exactly as Brother Chaplai said, could be the moment to ask for support in with practice friends. Sometimes you have to ask someone to hold your hand and just say, please, breathe with me. I need you to help me to breathe through this because I can't hold it. And thank goodness we have friends in the practice who can help us in those moments. I know I need it. There's moments when there's things that come up from my childhood or something that it's just, I can't hold it. I'm not ready yet to, I don't have enough mindfulness or compassion to completely, peacefully embrace it. And if I know that, then that's the moment when I need to ask for support. But there's other times when I feel like, okay, I can do this. I can be with this. And in a way, sometimes when we say change the track, it could be misleading because it might seem like we mean don't pay attention to the negative thing, pay attention to the positive thing. But sometimes changing the track is actually just changing the way of responding to the situation. So it doesn't mean you don't respond to the situation, but you respond to it with compassion, with gentleness. So for example, if I get irritated or angry, or I'm upset in a situation, why is this happening? And then changing the track might be, oh, can I change my view? Can I bring up the energy of compassion and mindfulness, look at the same situation but with the eyes of love? And it's not that I'm not dealing with it, I'm dealing with it, but I've changed the track to the track of compassion, understanding, and love. So, yeah, it could be a bit misleading too. But sometimes it can also be appropriate to change the object of attention completely. But that's more in the case of consumption. So if there's something that I know is watering negative seeds in me, maybe a conversation, a situation, maybe a film, a book, whatever it might be, and I know that it's watering seeds of fear, of craving, of hatred, of violence, or whatever it might be, or irritation, any of those things, and I just have to say, okay, I need to stop. I need to get out of this situation and go and hug a tree or something, you know, just do something else that's not watering those negative seeds. But that's also another form of changing the track.
Just want to add a small thing to the track thing, because I also just what those kinds of things that come up that are negative, that keep coming up repetitively, that kind of dog you. Negative thought about yourself, you say something hard to yourself. Those ones, it's learning to change the track, because it's basically become a habit of the mind that these things come up. Those ones are really, this changing the track really applies well. And what I do is, I had some success with is treating them then as a bell of mindfulness. So you, when they come up, it's like, that's my bell, I stop, I breathe 3 times, and then I have my alternative thought, my strategy of like, this is what I'm going to do instead of that. I'm going to think this compassionate thought instead of this hard, violent thought, for instance, and you replace it there and then, but with the mindful breathing, just 3 breaths to make a break, introduce the negative, the positive in place, and then go on with your whatever. And then if it comes up again, it's like another bell. And in Plum Village, we have to stop and start with many bells, so it's actually like being in Plum Village when you have these things springing up. Oh, another bell. Okay, I'm going to stop and breathe. Okay, I can get on now. And then you've replaced the thought. Oh, it's come up again. So you could treat it positively like that. So that's just a bit my practice with this changing the track. And I'm just aware of time again, but I'm also really acutely aware that there was the very first question we haven't responded to.
I just wanted to share a little bit about the kind of being in the monastery, being in the world dichotomy. For me, it's, I think, a false dichotomy. I think it's not... I think I would like to ask for your help in seeing that differently, seeing that... the real monastery, the real retreat center is in our hearts. It's wherever we're able to generate thoughts of love, compassion, and forgiveness. In that moment, Plum Village or the monastery or whatever is the place where we touch that healing and forgiveness, it's there, it's alive, it's real. And, you know, Plum Village, if I don't take care of my mind, it can also become hell. You know? So it's not it's not necessarily so. And London, yeah, can also become heaven if we take care of creating those moments. Plum Village is here. Plum Village is now. And very much, that's something that happens together, that we need to support each other to do. And finally, to come to the very first question, about how to offer support to somebody who's in distress, and suffering. Is something I've experienced with my own grandmother when she went into dementia and she was in incredible suffering and she wanted to die, but she also somehow couldn't allow herself to let go, couldn't allow herself to die. And I was lucky enough to be able to go and stay with her and be with her. And I didn't know what to do. I really didn't know what to do. Faced with that much suffering, I didn't know what to do, but I decided to just trust the practice of being there, of generating my true presence. So just, I just sat with her. I just sat next to her bed, and I followed my breath. And I said, I have no idea what to do, but I'm just going to follow my breath. And I put my faith in mindfulness. And I felt, as I became more and more mindful, more and more peaceful, as I was able to relax, because I was tensing up, I was reacting also to her suffering, and I found it very hard. It was bringing up a lot of emotions in me. But the more I was able to take care of the suffering in me, the tension arising in me, in my body, in my feelings, in my thoughts, then I could feel the energy, the atmosphere in the room start to change. And I felt her breathing change. And she didn't know what I was doing. I mean, she was at that point not even, barely conscious, but kind of in agony, just screaming, all continuously, but I could feel like as I was able to take care of my part, then the situation started to change, and I felt like. In the end, I discovered, and this is just in this case, I don't know in your case, but what I discovered was that she needed somebody to listen to her. She deeply, deeply needed somebody to listen to her. And the more I became still, somehow intuitively, she felt that I was there. That there was somebody there who could hear what she needed to say. And I feel very grateful to Tai and to this practice that as a result my grandmother was able to release some of her pain, to share, to feel that she was heard, and for some healing to take place. It wasn't complete. I think she still had a lot of pain. It still wasn't easy for her to let go, but I felt there was some relief. And the main thing was just to see what is the situation bringing up in me, what are my reactions, and how can I take care of them to the best of my ability, and just trusting the breath, the breath, the breath. And, felt like that was my guide. That was my guide through every moment of that situation. I felt touched by your question, and I just wanted to share my experience. I hope it's relevant.
So we're coming past the time, and I just want to say very briefly to the, there's two parts to your question. The second part I felt got brushed over, I mean in a good way, with my broad brush. The second, the first part was how to transform, and I just wanted to offer the suggestion that we can't transform. The practice of mindful breathing and entrusting the store consciousness, the transformation takes place. So it's not like we take something and we fix it, but with just embracing what is, we trust that. Like Brother Feplin was sharing, having the faith in the breath. It's because there is a natural process of healing and transformation that takes place. It's nothing to do with we don't kind of do it. It happens through the love and in acceptance and awareness that we bring to and identifying what is there. And this is there, and I take care of that. So that maybe trying to pick up on the first part of your question. I realized it was it's impossible to give comprehensive answers to all of the questions. They were very deep, and there's a lot we could share, maybe particularly for even your mother situation. As maybe there's others that have similar situations, and we can. It's another way of taking refuge in the Sangha, is to hear other people's ways of coping with the same situation, and learning for yourself to take care of yourself, and also have a place that you can share what's coming up for you, so that you can have more presence for your mother. And there is one practice of watering positive seeds. In other words, remembering the good things and reminding your mother of the good things. She may want to pass away quickly, she may be in pain, you may be not feeling able to help her with that, but at least her passage is going to be what it is in terms of moving on, in terms of going towards passing away. But in the meantime, you can try to water the good memories, the good things that you see in her life that have happened that you appreciate, and let her know what she's transmitted to you, that you are continuing for her. You're continuing her journey. Yeah, and that so she, when she does let go, it's also with some peace. We should now close. Maybe we have one sound of the bell for closing the practice session before then some announcements.
This small bell, we can just uncross our legs and massage our knees and ankles as we listen to some wonderful announcements.
Your brother passed by the other Saturday. Thank you so much for coming to Factor.